Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, before we get to the potential good martini, I'm sure as a Jets fan you're really feeling bad for Tom Brady today, although I think you're probably most upset that they don't play the Jets in the first four games of the season.
I now have this fantasy, Greg, in that Brady pursues an injunction against the league's ruling that he's been suspended for four games. He gets it. It gets delayed, and finally the court system rules against him. So the four-game suspension kicks in during one of the two times the Jets play the Patriots this year. And actually, I'm putting this question to my Patriot fan friends, that would you rather lose him for the first four games against some tough teams in there like Pittsburgh and I believe the Cowboys are in there and things like that. But the flip side is, you know, the next four games or later in the season, you end up with, in addition to the Jets, you end up with, I believe it's the Colts, also a tough team, Dolphins and Redskins. If that's the easier portion of the schedule, would you rather not have your quarterback for the hard games or for the easy games? Because at the end of the year, if you lost the easy games, it might be more frustrating. You know, you'd rather have Brady, you know, take care of business against the bad teams. And when you lose the first couple of games, that's because they didn't have Brady. You have that built-in explanation there. Or the idea that it might be more disruptive to lose them for four games mid-season rather than the beginning of the season. Anyway, so that's my analysis. And, you know, theoretically, listeners should know you and I seriously debated making this the good martini of the day.
We did. Might have turned out that way anyway. But my two thoughts are, think about the person who's got a legitimate legal case who's going to get bumped from the federal court schedule for this thing. And my takeaway question for you is, who's going to pay a stiffer price for destroying classified material, Tom Brady or Hillary Clinton?
Ooh, that is good, Greg. I'm going to steal that. That's excellent, excellent line.
All right, on to the good martini now. At least it could be. Mullah Omar could be dead. Mullah Omar, of course, was the head of the Taliban at the time that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda were buddy-buddy in Afghanistan. That all ended in the fall and into the winter of 2001 when the U.S.-led coalition came in there and obliterated the Taliban, but he ended up in hiding for many, many years. I think we had a chance to get him in the tunnels underneath Waziristan in Pakistan a few years after that, but for the most part, it looks like he has survived. Now Afghan intelligence is reporting that he's not only dead, but actually been dead for 2 years. The Taliban vociferously denying that, but if in fact this is true, Jim, the death came about 12 years after 9/11, and obviously that's a long time, but for someone who had such a critical role in the deaths of so many innocent people, it's gratifying to know there's a good chance he's been taken out.
It's not terribly implausible, since really no one has seen any serious proof of life for him in many, many years. And so it's not surprising there would be rumors that he's died. But, you know, interestingly, there's only one really good photo of him from the 1980s and 1990s. Nobody's really seen him since the fall of the Taliban in 2001. So, you know, this is kind of interesting and plausible rumor here. It would be a useful victory for the United States to just have him not on the scene. This is the guy who protected bin Laden. On the other hand, if he just died in a cave somewhere, one theory is he had some sort of disease. Another theory is that one of his lieutenants turned on him. It's kind of frustrating that, you know, the massive manhunt and all the forces the U.S. had in Afghanistan never managed to successfully uncover him. On the other hand, as we've never haven't heard from this guy in the better part of 14 years or so, you could argue that the United States military intervention in Afghanistan effectively took him out of the game. That if you're hiding in a cave somewhere, you are not actually doing anything in terms of attempting to control the Taliban. And, you know, we forced him into retirement, you could say. And, you know, it's a sign that if you protect a terrorist who attacks Americans, you will eventually encounter very severe consequences.
Yeah, well, let's hope that's the case, although something tells me his replacement won't be all that much better. But at least that's good news. All right, on to the bad martini now. And this is courtesy of your colleague, Joel Gerke at National Review, who last week broke the story of the side deals that had not been reported to Congress by the Obama administration about IAEA inspections and their ability to negotiate and make concessions without Congress reviewing those concessions. Yesterday, Secretary of State John Kerry and other members of the cabinet testifying before the House Foreign Affairs Committee under questioning from California Democrat Brad Sherman. The question was, let's say Congress doesn't take your advice. We override a veto, and the law that's triggered then imposes certain sanctions. Will you follow the law even though you think it violates this agreement clearly? and even if you think it's absolutely terrible policy. Carrie demurred. I can't begin to answer that at this point without consulting with the president and determining what the circumstances are. Sherman was clearly surprised by the answer. So you're not committed to following the law? No, I said I'm not going to deal with a hypothetical, that's all, said Carrie. So, Jim, you interpret John Kerry better than just about anyone, given your vast experience with him on the campaign trail and beyond. What do you make of Kerry hemming and hawing about whether, if Congress can actually muster the two-thirds to reject this deal, whether the administration would actually do Congress the honor of abiding by current law?
You know, probably this is a natural consequence of an administration filled with people who see congressional Republicans as a more menacing threat and bigger problem to be dealt with than the Iranian mullahs. At this point, we really can't say that anything seems unbelievable from the administration. The idea they'd have secret side deals with the Iranians. We've already seen them make all kinds of concessions during the official ones, and it's just been so clear they're desperate for a deal. They'll give the Iranians anything they want. And they, you know, look, I'm one of those guys who looks and said, wait a minute, we're making a – probably – you can't simultaneously say this is the single most consequential foreign policy decision to come down the pike since the Iraq war and then say, oh, by the way, it's totally not a treaty and isn't required to have congressional approval. And this is the Corker deal was a pathetic – capitulation on the part of of Republicans, because yes, this is a treaty, and as a result, it should require ratification by the Senate. And you know, I think the administration knew it was always going to have a hard time getting 50 votes, so they much preferred a system where they only need 34. And look, maybe the suggestion that there are secret side deals might you know persuade a few more Democrats to feel nervous about this. But at this point, I'm not feeling very optimistic.
Okay, on to the crazy martini now, and what could have easily been the bad or crazy martini today is the third video from the Center for Medical Progress. This one by far the most grisly. Once again, the focus being on Planned Parenthood potentially profiting off of the sale of the parts of aborted babies to medical research firms. This one had the graphic undercover video of abortionists actually picking through the remains of an aborted baby just shy of 12 weeks old. Absolutely heartbreaking to watch, but important to know what's going on. But it's not getting as much coverage as the first video, and now I think we know why. The Federalist reporting, how bad is the baby organ trafficking story for Planned Parenthood? So bad that the nation's largest abortion provider has hired a pricey PR firm to bully media outlets into not covering the scandal. According to Politico, Planned Parenthood hired Democratic megafirm SKD Knickerbocker to handle its public relations efforts surrounding the widening organ trafficking scandal. And basically, you've got the Huffington Post gladly not reporting on any subsequent videos. Vox is not doing it. BuzzFeed's not doing it. The network news casts are certainly finding other things to talk about than this as well. Then Politico had the audacity to do a story and tweet about the fact that this PR firm was in fact pressuring media outlets not to report on the story, and then they must have gotten pressure on that because they then deleted the tweet, Jim. So the courage of the press is on full display here.
I was going to say, have you ever wondered, does the press take orders from Democratic strategists? Well, certainly it seems like that's the case here. Most of the institutions you listed there weren't that surprising. The idea of Vox or somebody ignoring a story because it's inconvenient to Democrats doesn't seem the least bit surprising. There are two interesting things that really jump out at me. One is this idea that, well, you can't show the videos because they're invading to patient privacy. How many patients do we see in those videos, Greg?
Just the baby.
What patient is having their personal information exposed there? Even if there was something in there like, okay, let's not do that. The comments of the doctors, i.e., you know, let's see how much we can get for this and stuff like that, that certainly would seem fair game. So I'm kind of left baffled by their explanation. It seems like they're just kind of pulling them out of thin air. I'm kind of just baffled and frustrated by the acquiescence of the media, because apparently once you do that, once somebody says to you, please don't run a story, please don't cover this stuff because it's inconvenient to us, shouldn't that bring out your sense of, heck no, you don't tell me what my job is. You don't tell me what's newsworthy. You're not the boss of me. But I guess apparently if you're a reporter and you know, Knickerbocker calls, they are the boss of you.
Unbelievable. And the White House carrying the water, Democrats carrying the water. Very few are actually breaking ranks here, even if it's pro-choice. There's some activists who are upset about it. Kirsten Powers is one that comes to mind initially. But for the most part, it's lockstep. This is the one issue where any deviation from the liberal orthodoxy seems completely unacceptable, perhaps even more than some other hotbed and bread-and-butter liberal issues.
There are certain issues where it kind of gets you in your gut. I know I've heard a lot of people who watch those videos have been outraged. I've heard a lot of people say, I'm kind of afraid to watch them. And yes, the third one does have some graphic things in it. People have been kind of expressing some surprise that Fox News, you know, you're seeing little hands and stuff in there. Mm-hmm. It is really, really disturbing. And I can understand the reticence. I can understand all that kind of mentality. But man, oh man, I am just the idea of, well, it's too unpleasant, so we're not even going to talk about it. We're going to pretend it didn't happen. That's the opposite of news. That is, you know, hiding the truth, which is exactly what journalists are not supposed to be doing here. You know, we will see over time if eventually the news media recognizes they're attempting to be spun, they're attempting to be bullied, and that their job to the truth, you know, overrides any concerns about getting along with Knickerbocker at the next cocktail party.
Jim, we'll leave it there. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Please tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.